Interesting subject for today is death. And we're all looking at that end result, aren't we? We're all going to die at one time. Why? And we want to start out with this. Why do you think that people continue to sin? Let's go ahead and read Ecclesiastes 8, verse 11 through 13. You want to follow along with these? Chapter 8, verses 11 through 13. Because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. Though a sinner does evil 100 times, and his days are prolonged, yet I surely know that it will be well with those who fear God, who fear before Him. But it will not be well with the wicked, nor will he prolong his days, which are as a shadow, because he does not show fear before God. So this somewhat answers our question, but why do you think people continue to sin? You know, we see it today, don't we? People do horrible crimes. They're thrown in jail, and it takes them 2 or 3 years before they even get a trial. And then what happens after that, they go spend some time in a prison. But it's not speed that the government, I appreciate the fact that you want to make sure that justice is served. And you want to make sure that the person that you're on trial, having a trial, is guilty. We understand that. But what happens to someone who is they found not guilty because of circumstantial evidence or not enough evidence to persecute him, even though everybody knows he's guilty? What happens to that? Do you think that guy's going to go back all of a sudden and he's going to get religion? Isn't he going to continue to sin? Isn't that what happens with most sinners? Because they're not speedily, justice is not served speedily. He continues to sin. Isn't that correct? Well, anybody have any comments about that? Bob?
I'll be your Huckleberry.
I'm sorry?
I said, I'll be your Huckleberry. In today's society, we are continually encouraged to sin. All of our media, I don't care what media you choose, it can be print or, you know, electronic media, encourage us to sin. All the stories are written glorifying the person who is perpetrating some crime, because there's always some extenuating circumstance, you know, that makes us feel sympathetic to that person. But, of course, God is not sympathetic towards sin. He hates sin. And we should remind ourselves of that, and also remind ourselves that Satan is busy constantly trying to encourage us to be like the world.
Yeah, we have a pressure everywhere we go. Yeah.
Well, I read a story like the story of Ananias and Sapphira. in the early part of the book of Acts. And I am constantly reminded how glad I am that God does not immediately execute the wrath that I deserve. There'd be a lot of wrecks on the highway if God did that. But I understand how the failure to have any consequence for wrongdoing encourages further wrongdoing. But somehow I need to incorporate thankfulness for God's grace and thankfulness that he gives me time to repent.
That, well, I guess we all should be thankful for God's patience, because we're constantly making mistakes. And well, Dean, I appreciate God being so patient with us. Yes, Greg.
I think some people really think they'll never get caught.
Don't have any fear in them because they don't fear God. And so the fear is kind of minor. Yes, Margaret.
I think our justice system and God's justice system aren't even comparable, because our justice system really is not just a good part of the time. And so I think we need to remember that. Also, I think the lack of humility is what keeps us continually sinning, because we don't humble ourselves before God and accept his grace and his word.
Okay. Anybody else? Go ahead.
So I'm a parent of a college kid and a high school kid, and I'm finding that our youth, even in the realms of public schools and or universities or private schools, are not being held accountable. Now, a lot that comes into play with that is the emphasis of mental health. But our children are also learning that they can use that as a crutch or something to not have to be held accountable. And I just, from my perspective, people that I have to deal with in their age group, and also dealing with just now our public in general, and part of it is post-COVID, but a lot of this started before then. And it is just, and I understand where some of this is coming from. I understand where some of these laws are coming from. But in this state and in Washington, where I spent the first 50 years of my life before moving to this state, and where I have a college kid still enrolled, but I have a high school kid here in Oregon. And it is at 13, their doctors don't have to tell their parents diddly, you know. And then when they're in high school, if they want to tell something to their counselors or whatever, there are similar laws. And so the parents are becoming handcuffed, but it's not necessarily, it's just, and I understand that there are 13-year-olds out there that do need to have privacy, because if that was shared with a parent at home, they'd get beaten. I've had to like protect it, you know, a friend of my child, but it's just, The spectrum is, and it's with like a lot of laws, they go too far. You know, the intent is good, but it's just the climate that everything goes too far. And it's both sides. It'll either go too far to the right or too far to the left. And I think that is one of the nuts and bolts that we are seeing evident as this next generation is coming up. because before a teacher could call them on something, right? Well, now a teacher doesn't call them on something because this generation, and this is what's really sad, because there are some really legit people out there that will say, you know, if you don't listen to me, I'll self-harm. And the problem is that there are some people that that is so true, but there are other people that are learning to use that. And so our doctors and our teachers and our counselors are becoming handcuffed. And I think that's just a perspective I wanted to share that is very prevalent.
You know, you can see that every day.
Okay.
Well, look at the universities here that are anti-Israeli, for instance. They're coming up in big groups and justifying this murder and chaos that was created on people, innocent people. Now, we know we're going to have things like wars and whatever like that. We understand that. But the colleges are teaching this rhetoric of hate, and it's just gone beyond the reasonable responsibility of I've forgotten what I want to, exactly the word I want to use, but you get to see it in your everyday. You know, you look at children, you look at young adults, you see their thoughts coming out. They've got that from the schools. And it just, I cringe every time I look at some postings on Facebook or something like that, and these people have no idea how to spell. It just makes you cringe, you know. And I wasn't that great of an English student, especially in punctuation and, you know, sentencing and that type of thing. But they don't even make an effort to do things, to teach stuff like that anymore in this school. They're too busy indoctrinating these kids. And boy, it really comes out. Sure.
But you go back to the first sin with Adam and Eve. They even knew God. Many people out there don't know God, but Adam and Eve chose each other and chose the world and turned their back on a God that they had known. And so there are many people out in the world, they don't even necessarily, if they know or think there's a God, they don't know that there's a retribution somewhere down the line. So for them, why would I be nice to this person and not nice to myself? So, you know, it's how good can you get for yourself rather than for others? And you get the care for others because the Lord teaches you how to love.
Is there a relationship between sin and how long a person lived? I mean, you know, if you sin all the time, then you're going to die quickly. Or are you righteous? You try to do the best you can, serving your God. Does that guarantee a long life?
I would like to share a story. I know I'm a visitor. I'm Kathleen's niece. I hope I don't embarrass you. But my college-age daughter, she has a very close friend. He's a year younger than her. And he is he's 20 years old. He is in the final moments of his life. He is suffering from Ewing sarcoma, which is a absolutely excruciating youth bone cancer. This kid has been compared to Job by many of us. This young man, he was a student at George Fox, even though he's from North Washington. He enrolled in George Fox. And after the first term of his freshman year, he was diagnosed with Ewing sarcoma. And he endured excruciating chemo. and he steadfast in his faith, and he just continued to, and then was declared last February cancer-free, only to have it return in April. Absolutely engulfed his body. And he is now in the last literal days of his life. And he has still steadfast. And so I don't think age is a thing necessarily. And I don't think faithfulness is necessarily a thing.
Thank you, Spike James. Margaret?
If we live our life in the pattern that God has set, he knows what's best for us. We follow that, our chances are sure going to be better of having a longer life. If you live a life filled with sin and you have frequent evil places and evil people, your life probably cut short.
Yeah, really. I think you're right. We do have some control over what happens to us and how long that we do it.
Yeah.
There's no guarantees from one day to the next for any of us. I look back and on a series of events in my lifetime, and it's a wonder that I'm alive to this day. So I have to feel like God's had a hand in it somewhere. But boy, I pulled some real humdinger stunts, I'll tell you, over the years. And those were lessons that I learned. I survived. But I tried not to do that type of thing again, you know, because it was, and, you know, some of them happened so quickly, I didn't have time to be afraid. Just shake afterwards, you know, and thank the good Lord for what blessings he had. But there's not a guarantee for any of us past today, this moment. And so the young people, there's a number of young people that lose their lives when they're young, mostly by accident. Some sickness, but mostly by accident. But I tell you, when you look at death, I'm 82 years old. And so that comes up in my mind quite a bit. Very seldom ever arose in my thoughts when I was young. But as you get older, you start thinking about things like that, aches and pains, and you wonder, oh, that's a strange pain. Wonder if that's going to cost me my life. Things like that, and they go through my mind. I know it goes through just about everybody who gets up into the higher ages. They wonder how much more time do we have? Well, the Lord's been gracious to me because he's allowed me to live this long, but, you do think about those things. What does Ecclesiastes in, earlier chapter say about young people? And about old people? Talks about young people. Remember God during your youthful years. Remember God because before the dark, the bad times come, that's the times when you get older. You start having aches and pains and some of the joy goes out of your life. So remember your God when you're young and serve him as best you can. Is there a relationship between things such as blessings or perhaps problems in one's life and righteousness? Does God bless us because we're with long life necessarily? We pretty much answered that. But God can certainly make our life a lot more pleasant, can he? What happens to the guy that has all kinds of talent? God purposely point that person out and choose them and give them a lot of talent, a lot of wisdom, Anybody? Isn't it strictly by chance again?
You see our athletes, you know, those who consider themselves Christians or following, you know, most of the time they're the ones that, you know, want to acknowledge God for their abilities, which I see good, you know, I see good in that. I also see that it can be taken the wrong way too. So there's one example.
You know, I've often thought about that question. You hear a lot of times that there's been some catastrophic event, like a plane crash or something, and somebody survives it and says, well, God was really watching out for me and taking care of me. Well, what about the person that lost their life next to them? You know, that somebody else that experienced the same thing. So does God not love that person and bless that person and take care of that person as well? And so I struggle with that a little bit. And it's not that I think things are left to chance. And I agree with Margaret. If we live in a certain way, the likelihood of good things coming our way is higher than if we frequent, you know, places or things, or we do things, we get involved in things that are not good for us. So I think that we have God's protection in that regard. But I think that he, you know, the rain falls on the just and the unjust, you know, and I think, And you know, I've been thinking about this conversation and discussion that we're having. I think the wise man also said there's nothing new under the sun. Human nature is the same. We're the same as we were. We just got finished reading through the Old Testament and looking at all of those stories and human nature and how people sinned and how they were blessed and how they were righteous and all of that. I think that that we need to look, when we look back on things that happened, we can see God's blessings in our life. But I'm not sure that that's something that I earned and deserved. Do you know what I mean? I don't think you can, that if I'm righteous, good things are going to come my way. I think the likelihood of good things happening are higher, but I don't know that I'm necessarily blessed with good health or, I mean, we've known, and this young man that she was talking about is living a righteous life. He has a strong faith, and yet his life is going to be cut short in a terrible way, in a very painful way. We aren't guaranteed anything in our life. So we can't earn it. We nothing we can do will earn God's favor and blessing. He's just given it freely.
David?
I got two comments. I'm kind of a slow thinker, so I digest and then I make a comment two questions ago. But the first one about sin, I think humans by nature are self-serving as a whole. I think those that follow God are serve others. I think that's the difference between the sin and the not sin. As far as the age, I don't know whether to be offended or agree, but at my age, I'm like tipping the scale between young and old. I've known a lot of old evil people, but they're more experienced at it. They're better practiced, whereas the young, they're less experienced at being evil. I don't think there's really I think there's both young and old that are evil.
Yep.
So stop picking on the young people.
We just fall on the just and the unjust. The difference comes in how we handle it. Because you can take the rain and make some good out of it.
How? Okay, Frank.
There's an interesting verse in Deuteronomy 4:40. So you shall keep his statutes and his commandments, which I am giving you today, that it may go well with you and with your children after you, and that you may live long on the land which the Lord God has given you for all time. And that's what Margaret is saying. You're less likely to get in trouble if you're following God's laws. It doesn't mean you won't get in trouble. It doesn't mean that time and chance will get you.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at the overall picture.
Yeah, you can eliminate a lot of situations just by being a righteous person. If you're in the wrong place, I mean, go into a bar or a saloon or whatever like that. You're going to be around people who might not have their right senses, and the time of violence is right there on the edge. And if you're there, you might get picked up. Well, if you're a righteous person, you're not going to be visiting that situation, so you're not going to be caught in that. Yes, sir.
If you have a sinful person and a righteous person, and they do or have exactly the same thing happen to them, the righteous person, because they believe in God, is going to somehow, someday, see the blessing that God has given them. Not necessarily in that is happening, but a blessing that is tied to it in some way that you say, oh, I learned this lesson, or, oh, my sorrow helped someone else, or, you know. And so it, as Margaret says, this life is better just because you are God's and following His. He doesn't guarantee anything to anybody, though.
Yeah, how does the view of death differ between a person who is righteous and a wicked person? How is death viewed differently?
I was thinking about when you said you were 82 and you think about death. Well, we do think about death more as we get older because we're closer to it. But we don't dread it.
No.
Death is not really a threat to us, no, than it is to those who are in sin.
Yeah. Why do we not fear death? I mean, that fear is, is there. It's part of our makeup. But why don't we fear death?
Because we
like a wicked person. Yeah.
Because we have God and we know there's a better place coming for us.
Yeah, this is just a transition period, isn't it? We know that there's something beyond that, much better than our life here on earth. The wicked man doesn't have that, does he? End of life. It's gone. And you hear that all the time. I don't believe in God. Well, that's a shame, but what's going to happen to that person? They're going to answer for their life, aren't they? They're going to be judged, but they don't believe that. They're just the end. When they die, that's the end. But we can look forward to that better time, can't we?
Yeah. Ron, I think that takes us back to the very basic question in Ecclesiastes. If you restrict your view to what is here and now, if you live under the sun, then life is a terrible, confusing mess if you have a longer view. And he'll talk about that next week. If you have a longer view, if death is just a transition from this existence to a further existence, I'm the same person. It's just a transition. That gives you a whole different outlook on death and on the way that you live here now and everything. So, there is no way for us to think that we can cheat death or we can escape death. There are only two people other than Christ who ever lived and did not die. And I'm not going to be one of them. So, There is no way to insulate yourself from this.
What? This is the last question here. We're running out of time. What was the writer of Ecclesiastes? What was his ultimate decision? What was his, what conclusion did he come to?
All is vanity.
I'm sorry?
All is vanity.
Okay, all is vanity.
Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man.
Okay. Fear God and keep his commandments. The whole duty. But what does he say? What does the writer suggest we do? And we can pursue riches, we can, the writer here tried to figure out, all the hidden things of God, and he finally decided that that was impossible. He couldn't figure out what God was doing. So he came to a conclusion, didn't he? Did you have a comment? Okay. Wasn't it just be happy in the work that you do, accept your life as it goes by, do the best you can, and be merry, be happy. Talks about being happy with the woman that you chose to be your companion. Go through life, do the best you can, serve God, be happy, and that's it. Going to come to the end sooner or later, but while your time on earth is limited here, be happy with the time that you've got. Yes, Mike.
Just know that God is on the throne, he's in control, and we're okay.
There you go. Always know that God is in control. Do the best we can, and life will go along our time here and breathe. It's like a shadow. And I've learned that too. When you're young folks, you're going to live forever, and which is great. You know, I mean, if they've got all kinds of time and stuff like that, not always the case. But when you start getting older, you realize that life is just a shadow. I can't remember the writer that. That spoke of it said that our life is like the flowering grass in the fields. Just there for a short time, the wind comes and dries it up, and it goes away.